Well, what a gem we have in today's gospel passage, right? Jesus gives us one of his most well-known and most beautiful parables. The Good Samaritan, of course. But don't get too romantic now. He offers this parable in order to more clearly articulate the stiff challenge that he gives to the scholar and also to us. "Do this and you will live," he responds when the scholar correctly identifies what must be done in order to inherit eternal life. Namely, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your being, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." This is a tall order, to be sure, and we must do all of it. All of it, as the scholar learns when asking about service to one's neighbor. He thinks he's pretty cute with this question, but what does he get in return? A little bit of a lesson, right? Yes, he learns the uncomfortable truth that he is called to love and care for all people, even those who may burden him, frighten him, or make him uneasy. If a Samaritan is willing to do this for one of his bitter enemies, a Jew, well, then the scholar, who is a prominent elite member of the Jewish nation, should certainly be able to follow suit, right? It should be a leader in this. Indeed, the scholar and each of us as well are called to be other Christs to our neighbors and to have a preferential option for the poor, the downtrodden, and the abandoned. The Samaritan certainly is a Christ-like presence. We heard he's moved with compassion, not with fear or indifference, as the priest and the Levite seem to be motivated by. This man is moved by compassion. He approaches the victim, pours oil and wine over his wounds, and bandages them. Such a beautiful act of tenderness here we see. And he's not going the cheap route here either. He could have just taken a little bit of his drinking water, you know, and poured it on the wounds and maybe wiped them off. But oil and wine he uses. So that's a beautiful, beautiful symbolism of his generosity. But also, we can't help but see Jesus pointing to the sacraments that will follow after his death. The Samaritan lifts him onto his own animal. He's lifted up. We can't help but think of Jesus himself being lifted up on the cross to bear the burden for us. This animal bears the burden for the victim of the robbers. And he takes him to an inn and further cares for him, even leaving money to continue care once he has to leave. So the Samaritan pays the price for this victim. I can't help but think of Jesus paying the price for us on the cross. Notice how the Samaritan goes far above and beyond what we might expect. Just some gentle courtesy and care of a brother or sister. He goes beyond that. He doesn't just give some encouragement, maybe a bite to eat, and kind of help bandage up the wounds a little bit, and then leave. He drops everything and empties himself out. Who knows where he was going, but he didn't plan to pick up a guy, bring him to an inn, spend time caring for him there, right? But he drops it all and empties himself out. And remember, this is one of his enemies. Jews and Samaritans did not get along well. This, friends, is true social justice. True social justice. He doesn't just serve the victim physically and emotionally. He restores the victim's human dignity and ultimately restores him to communion with God. A little more context to help you understand what I'm getting at here. The victim is traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho, from light to darkness. He's going the wrong way, from the heights. Jerusalem is always seen in the Bible as the heights. We have the heavenly Jerusalem, right, that eventually comes in due time, but it's always seen as pointing up toward heaven, and physically it's much higher. It's about 3,000 feet higher than Jericho. We know some bad things happened in Jerusalem, but what it points to the ideal is a heavenly realm. Jericho is one of the lowest places on earth, and I think it's about 638 or so feet below sea level. It's almost as low as the Dead Sea. It's not that far from Jericho to the Dead Sea. And so it represents the darkness, the depths of sin and human struggle. So you see, this guy's he's going the wrong way. He's going from the beauty of God's love down into the darkness, into sinfulness. And he ends up all alone, which that's what sin does. It isolates us, draws us closer into the clutches of the evil one who always wants to isolate. So he finds himself alone and left for dead. Physically, yes, but also spiritually. He was robbed, and sin robs us of our true dignity as Christians. It robs us of that joy and peace that only comes from the Lord. Clearly, this Samaritan, often seen as Jesus, there's other interpretations, but most often seen as Jesus, recognizes this and does everything in his power to get the victim, who represents all of us, fallen humanity here, going on the wrong road. He does everything in his power to get the victim back on the right path. He cares for the man's soul as well as his body. And as we noted earlier, he does so selflessly. We have beautiful imagery of the Eucharist. He's bringing him back into the fold, into the body, into communion. This guy was totally isolated. Now he's back in communion. And we also see imagery of the cross, where Jesus isn't just the Samaritan in a way, he's also the victim, right? He's the ultimate victim. He went to the cross for us, his passion, death, and resurrection. He came down from heaven into our Jericho to rescue us, to save us. He was stripped, beaten, and left for dead on the cross for us. So yes, this is true social justice. And note that it flows from God's own heart, not from the mere whims and wishes of human beings. Therefore, what does this mean for us? Well, we must increasingly strive for deeper communion with God in order to be effective conduits of social justice. And so as we go back to that first piece from the gospel, that first piece is so crucial when Jesus says, well, what do you think? What do you read? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your being, with all your strength, and all your mind. And your neighbor as yourself. Notice that last piece comes last. You got to get the first one right. Otherwise, you have nothing to give. And social justice becomes more and more about you and less about actually serving other people. This is precisely what Moses is getting at with the Israelites. That's what he's urging them and us to do in that first reading. If only you would heed the voice of the Lord your God, and keep his commandments and statutes, and return to him with all your heart and all your soul. If only. This is right at the end of Moses' life. It's chapter 30 of Deuteronomy. I think there's only 32 chapters, so this is right before he dies. And he's kind of exhausted with these Israelites, right? They've been wandering away from the Lord. They've been wandering in the desert. They say, oh yeah, sure, God, we'll obey you. And then, you know, half an hour later, they have their idols out again, you know. Over and over. And he's saying, if only you would just heed the Lord your God, keep his statutes and commandments, return to him with your heart and your soul, things would be much different. If only. Now, this isn't easy. And Moses isn't trying to sugarcoat it, but it is possible. As he insists, this is not too mysterious and remote for you. No. Is something very near to you, already in your mouths and in your hearts. You only have to carry it out. In a nutshell, he's saying, sorry, no more excuses, right? To them and to us. We can say, oh, that will of the Lord, those commandments, they're just so hard, and those are only for great saints and mystics and for nuns and, you know, people that live in monasteries. No, Moses is saying, no, it's not too far and remote. You don't have to have somebody go over the other side of the ocean and say, okay, here it is, this is what you do. It's right here. You just have to welcome it and live it out. But the news gets even better, because the more you grow in your relationship with God, the more he actually carries this out in and through you. It's his work. It's not our work. We just allow him to do it in and through us. And this leads us to today's second reading, where St. Paul spectacularly reveals Christ's identity. This is right at the beginning of Colossians. I encourage you to read right at the beginning of chapter 1. It's marvelous. And this is an excerpt of it. Paul says, he, Jesus, of course, is the image of the invisible God. And in him, all things in heaven and on earth were created. He is before all things. And in him, all things hold together. You think, wow, that's Jesus. This is like cosmic Jesus, right? Way out there somewhere. He created everything. He still holds everything together. But that's him. He's too far and remote for me, right? Not so fast, because then we have the rest of the passage, which Paul further reveals our Lord, because at this very same time, he's not too far and remote. He is the head of the body, the church. We are the body. We are the church. He is our head. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead. He came down from heaven, from that heavenly Jerusalem. He came down and took on flesh, and he even went and died for us. Now he's the firstborn from the dead, the first one to rise from the dead in the glory of the resurrection. The one who has reconciled all things, making peace by the blood of his cross. It is this Jesus who already dwells within you. Not just God's commandments in your heart, like Moses is talking about. It's a whole different reality now that Christ has come, died, and risen. It's Christ himself who lives in your heart. And he's right there waiting to carry out these wonderful things within and around you. Friends, Jesus isn't just great at telling stories. He is. He tells good stories, but he also leads by example. He fulfills these very stories. He's come to reconcile fallen humanity, who's been robbed, beaten, and left for dead. Same thing with him. He was robbed, beaten, and left for dead, as we noted earlier. He's come to do this to get us back on the right road, the road to conversion, which ultimately leads to salvation. He isn't afraid to come near you, near your wounds, near your struggles, to touch and to heal your wounds. He's not afraid at all. You just have to say yes. And then he'll send you out to do the same to others, as we see in the example of the Good Samaritan. His mercy and love are without limit, and therefore ours should be as well, because we're united to him. We're Christians. To help kind of crystallize this and draw things to a conclusion, I'm going to give back to you the opening prayer that we heard today. So beautiful, and it really speaks so well to all that we've been reflecting on here. O God, who show the light of your truth to those who go astray, that's us, so that they may return to the right path, give all who for the faith they profess are accounted Christians the grace to reject whatever is contrary to the name of Christ and to strive after all that does it honor.